podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Celtic State of Mind. I'm Paul John Dykes, and today on a Thursday afternoon, as always, I'm joined by John Paul Mason. And before we go any further, JP, tell us about that jersey over your shoulders. I was just admiring it, and I like the camo, and you're telling me it's a Celtic effort.
It is. You can very, very faintly see the Adidas and Celtic badge. The last few years have just kind of blended into one. I don't really know. I can't really remember and put times to. I know that we lost the league and then won the league. That's about the size of it. But I know that came out. I think that might have came out as like a training gear drop sort of thing at the end of the 2021 season. And they just did like a bunch of limited camo gear stuff. And I quite like the look of that, so I got it. It's a very thin material. Like it's not. Obviously, it wasn't a football top. It is more of a training top. But just dug that out for the background today.
I like it. Well, the players and staff have to wear it at Ibrox so that they can't be seen. The people throwing bottles and stuff like that. Crossbows, darts.
Probably be recommended. Does it protect you against headbutts? I don't know.
You've not had a chance to talk about this, by the way, but we will be covering it. We'll also be covering the tagline, the four scarcely used Celts who could play a big part in our treble quest, and we'll be looking ahead to Ross County and everything else that's been happening since you were last on, including I know you already had a fondness and a love for Stevie G, and I want to ask your thoughts on his antics as well, JP, as well as a wee bit of the old music chat as well, because last Friday we were in Glasgow with Alan McGee, and in and around that, we have relaunched Scream of Celica, Kevin and I, and you'd have definitely been joining us, but you were busy because you do a lot of your work at night, and we've now covered the first four Oasis albums. I'm going to ask you a wee bit about that as well. I'm keen to hear your thoughts on it. Now, Xander Mack is in pretty quickly to suggest Bernabe, Ralston, Turnbull and Haksabanovic could be the four players, and I'm not going to disagree with you, Xander. They're not the four. One of them is. That's not the foursome that I've got in mind. But yes, I think there's a fair argument to say that Bernabe, Ralston, Turnbull also play a part. We've also got Celtic follower on the YouTube. I'd start with O on Sunday. Kyogo normally doesn't get any space at Dingwall, and O could bully his way through County centre-backs. Let's start with a look ahead to the game then. Are you going up on Sunday for the early kick-off, JP?
Nah, they've only given us one stand this time, so tickets are, as they always usually are for Dingwall, they're quite scarce. I think two or three times in the last couple of years, my first ever time at Dingwall coming in the season after, I think it was the Ralston game actually, the Ralston last minute winner was my first one, but no dice, no tickets. Contrary to popular belief, we don't get tickets for every single game just because we happen to talk for an hour on a Thursday on this. I'm not going to go up, so it'll be the TV for me, I think.
The thing is, I refer sometimes to the actual WhatsApp group, and I'm not saying it because it's a wee clique that guys and girls out there can't get involved in, but we do it so that everybody knows who's on the show, and if somebody drops out, if we can get somebody to stand in. And you will know by the chat on there, the scurry for spare tickets and all the rest of it all the time, that certainly there's no way we get any kind of preferential ticket treatment, that's for sure. But we do have Robert O'Neill who's coming in. Let's bring this one up, JP. This is actually for the Motherwell game. Hello, folks. Would anyone be able to help me out with a pair of tickets for the Motherwell game? will pay £70 each. Now, Robert is coming up from Southampton, wants to go take his boy to the match with his old fella who's a season ticket holder. He's looking for two. If anybody can help you out, Robert, what's the best way to get in touch with you, mate? Maybe you could put up an email address or let us know where you are on the socials. I'm sure somebody out there will be able to help. I'm just trying to think. Yeah, we had a couple of Feyenoord fans over from Rotterdam a couple of weeks back for the Hibs game, JP, and I remember even then, last minute, we got asked for an extra two, so we needed to come up with six tickets in the end, which, thankfully, when we put the call out, we did manage to get the extra two, and our two guests from Rotterdam really enjoyed their weekend in Glasgow, it's got to be said. It's always great if you're able to help people out, but the tickets, it's, even at home, is becoming really difficult. And again, frustratingly, you then see loads of empty seats because we don't have that ticket exchange programme. So it's a sellout. And there's people like Robert O'Neill coming up and they're looking for a couple of spares and sometimes it's hard for them to get it. We need to introduce a ticket exchange scheme.
Yeah, I chased my pal Paul because he was going away on tour on Tuesday and he's got a season ticket. And I'm sure his season ticket is the last thing he's thinking about before he goes away on tour. Obviously, he's spending time with his family, getting things in order and all the rest of it. So I was checking to see if he was using his season ticket because obviously Rangers game's coming up. There'll be other games that'll be getting played while he's away. And I just hate seeing a seat going to waste. See, like you said, like you look around, there's something you can do about it to fill it. I mean, there's plenty of people I know that would take a ticket if it was going, you know, and they would happily pay for it as well. You know, obviously not a fortune for it. It was face value or whatever it works out as when you divvy up the price through the season ticket price. But I just on Ross County as well, I did actually roll the dice once and go up without a ticket, which might be considered slightly insane to go all that way without a ticket. But we were about half an hour outside Dingwall and my mate got a text and was like, I've got you one. Yes. So sometimes it does pay to roll the dice, but I don't know if I'd be that brave at 7 o'clock in the morning on Sunday to do the same, because I think it will be even harder this time. I think obviously I got lucky that time, but you don't always get lucky, so it'd be a long way to go without a ticket. I mean, my mate messaged me the other day and said, oh, there's always tickets going up there. And I was like, I haven't really seen that many, but you don't really see a lot of folks standing outside with spare tickets at Dingwall. It's only one stand, so it's one of those. But yeah, the ticket exchange scheme should be something that they're looking at. I can't believe that they're not, given the strides that we've made in so many other aspects of the club in recent years, not least on the park, but off the park as well. So you'd think that would be something that someone within the club is looking at. I'd hope it is anyway.
This is the thing, JP. We're not making a big complaint or anything. The club's running really well. The team's doing so well in the park. We're not looking for things to complain about. But it's just at this moment where you're looking at wee tweaks that could make things even better. And then, obviously, people talk about the fan experience. This is something that's, you know, the dialogue is ongoing with fan forums. And even at the AGM, points are raised in relation to what fans are thinking throughout the season. We're looking ahead to Ross County on Sunday, of course. They've not had the best of seasons, but I do go back to the summer. Malky Mackay, they finished sixth last season, right? I think Ross County, did they finish sixth? Did they finish in the top six? I'm going to check that.
We played them away again and after the split, or no, we wouldn't have played them away because we played them twice, but maybe we played them at Celtic Park.
I'm going to have a look at that.
Right, Matt, I've got a decent memory, but the last 3 years have been a wee bit wild. It's been kind of non-stop. I just feel like someone's put me into a very fast-moving car and it's not stopped. that's kind of how it feels post-COVID, just because everything just stopped for so long, for 16 months. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as it started again, it's just been pretty frenetic. So
yeah, you have been a busy, busy guy, both in terms of Celtic, like real life beyond that, and also your music as well, JP. You know, you're involved with bands, but you're also involved heavily with DF at King Tut's and other places I've seen last night. Unfortunately, I don't know if it is because I'm so focused on what I'm doing in here and with the events and everything else that there's been a few gigs recently that I have missed. One such gig was the Damien Dempsey one that you spoke about the other week. Had I known about that, I would have made sure I was there. And then last night, I seen Badly Drawn Boy was playing at St. Luke's as well. Were you there? Were you working or was it for...
No, I actually asked my bot. Sometimes when gigs get announced, before they're announced, I can send an email and request to work a gig if it's something that I'd like to do. So I did that with Badly Drawn Boy, but I did it October last year, whenever the gig was announced or something like that. And my boss clearly forgot to put me down. And when I looked at the rota, it wasn't me that was on it. And I thought about saying something, but I was like, no, do you know what? I'll just go along and enjoy it. And to be honest, he kind of owed me one from a long, long time ago. In 2006, I went to see him at the Queen's Hall in Edinburgh, and he had a nightmare of a gig. Like, it was...
Is that when he was on like a bottle of Jack Daniels, a gig and all that stuff?
I don't know if he was drunk or not. I can't remember him being appeared drunk, but he just, from the very first song, I actually read the review that Stuart at Is This Music wrote of the gig last night, just to remind myself, and what from the review it was as bad as I remember. And he just was struggling with the sound on stage, and at one point he just stopped mid-song, headbutted the microphone, and then went, I'm going to go out the back for a cigarette. If any of you are still here when I come back out, then we'll carry on the gig. And it was just like, whoa, God. And he went away for about 10 minutes, and people were kind of like restless. Some people left, and it was just, it was really, really, I mean, he is quite an anxious character, and he still was last night, but it was great storytelling last night. He was talking about how he got the About a Boy soundtrack gig, and how he flew out to LA and sat in a hotel room with the people watching. They watched like a 3-hour version of About a Boy, and then before it was whittled down to an hour and a half, and they were like, it was about, he said something about timestamps for music, and that initially they were wanting like 150 or 160 timestamps for music that he had to come up with, and eventually it was whittled down to about 80, so it was a bit more manageable. And he's talking about writing the songs, and how he met Caroline Ahern as well. He went for drinks with her ahead of a project that they did together, a film, and became pals with her. And it just seemed a lot more comfortable on stage last night, which was a relief to me, because I was a bit apprehensive about it, about how it might go. And my mum was a big fan of his as well. She did very, really like contemporary music, but Badly Drawn Boy, I think because of About a Boy, was she was into him, and it was one of the few musical things that we could talk about together without her telling me to shut up.
Classic songwriting, classic storytelling. The reason I asked about the alcohol, he speaks openly and candidly about that on his Twitter page, doesn't he? The fact that he had a problem and he's now sober. So it's great to know that, things are picking up, because what a talent he is. I was going to say was. What a talent he is. Classic album.
Yeah, he kind of made a reference to... So I think it was Caroline Ahern had said that they'd been listening to his album, and he went, oh, it's probably Out of the Wildebeest, because that's all anybody listens to. Kind of like, very kind of like putting himself down a bit. But he played one of his, quite a few tracks on his new record that came out in 2020, and one of them is called Like Tony Wilson Said, and it's like a tribute to Tony Wilson. I don't know if you've not heard it, have a listen. It's a really, really great song. He played it second to last night, and told a story about how when he started Twisted Nerve, the record label, in the late 90s.
Was it Andy Votel? Was it Andy Votel the other day? Yeah.
Him and Andy Votel, who's married to Jane Weaver, who's really, really good as well. She's played Tuts. I did her show there. She was really good. But Tony Wilson came to see them when they started the label and sat and spoke to them for 2 hours and just really gave them a kind of leg up and told them they were doing good things and gave them advice and everything. And he said last night, he was like, that 2 hours is probably two of the best hours of my life, and getting to speak to to Tony Wolf. And I was just kind of very, very envious of him getting to do that, but really happy that it clearly means so much to him, even so many years later, that he's written a song about it. And and then he finished with a cover of The Strokes, Someday. And that was tribute to his brother. His brother passed away, I think, during COVID. Aye, so he dedicated that to him.
I read that on his Twitter. Interestingly enough, you know, that whole thing where somebody's trying to give you a leg up, somebody's trying to help you, right? Alan McGee speaks about that, or spoke about that rather, on Friday night, about Tony Wilson, by the way, believe it or not. He moved into this office block, right? And I think he was on the bottom floor. Tony Wilson was on the top floor. And they became friends, and Tony would give him advice. So there was this whole thing whereby it was... and they became lifelong friends after that. That was in the early days of Creation. You're talking mid-80s, JP, mm-hmm. and Tony Wilson came in. And you're talking about a situation where I can only relate it to when I started writing Celtic books. So I'm coming in, I guess, for left field. At that point, I'd never written a book. Didn't have really a phone full of contacts. You're starting from ground zero. And the amount of people who actually take you under their wing, help you out, give you a contact, organise meetings and all that kind of stuff. And then I think what's happened since then is I've always tried to do that with people who, for example, might be working on podcasts or in journalism or whatever, because it's the right thing to do. That's what it's all about, isn't it? It's really just about, I mean, there's enough space for everybody to do what they want to do. You don't have to try and shut doors on folk and
especially if you can see someone's going to do something from the right perspective and the right angle. You can usually tell within 5 minutes of speaking to somebody if they're doing it for the right reasons or they're doing it for nefarious reasons.
Exactly. Yeah. You know? A wee bit of altruism. That's all it is. A wee bit out. And, you know, you expect nothing back from it. And then when it makes an impression on people to the point where all these years later, Damon Goff has written a song about Tony Wilson. You know what I mean? It means something to him. And that probably Tony Wilson's given hundreds of people advice. You know what I mean? But it means something really special to every individual. By the way, if you haven't been watching Axiom on a Thursday for a while, you may not be aware that JP and I are very fond of a tangent, and often these tangents are musically related. Stephen Craig is actually listening live for the first time. Big shout out to you then, Stephen. I hope you enjoy it. You probably won't be commenting much if you're out running. But I tell you what, going out for a wee run also is good for the head, good for the soul. I've been doing a lot of that on the treadmill. I've not been going out running outside. That's the only exercise I do, by the way. I don't do any of the other stuff, but I like a run. It's good to clear the head, JP.
Rocky,
a wee bit of the Rocky soundtrack. Yes, I'm always listening to tunes. I've always done that. Even when I did my paper round on my bicycle, I was listening to Definitely Maybe and a wee Walkman. And then what happened was me and my friend, who both worked from the same paper shop, we exchanged tapes one day, and he gave me Snoop Dogg, Doggy Style, and I gave him Definitely Maybe for a week. And then after that, I was a Snoop fan, and he was an Oasis fan. And to this day, we both still are. Whose news? We'll probably see, this is an interesting one. Iwata in next, followed by Kobayashi, Haksabanovic, and Bernabe link up well in the absence of Greg Taylor. We'll probably see that. And the reason I want to pinpoint this is because obviously we've all got an idea, JP, of what your strongest 11 is. We've got an idea of it. How often that changes depending on the opponents, I'm not so sure if Ange kind of operates like that. But there is a suggestion that perhaps I'm trying to find the comment, perhaps O would be a good starter against, it was Celtic follower earlier, O would be a good starter against Ross County. Do you subscribe to that, or do you play Kyogo, who's been on brilliant form?
I don't think, I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to O starting, because he certainly looked tenacious and hungry hungry to do well. We only need to look at his reaction after his goal against Hibs, because, I mean, that was a meaningful goal to put us 2-1 up. And I think he was looking to score a goal of that sort of magnitude, like Abada has done in the past, like Giakoumakis did in the past, because those are the goals that win you favour or curry favour with the fans as a whole, I suppose. And it makes you think that you can rely on guys like that when you need when the chips are down and you need somebody to come up with something well, we know that he's done that once, so that he'll probably be able to do it again. But I think Kyogo's been that good. Maybe it wasn't great against Hibs. Didn't get a goal. Probably was disappointed in that. But I don't think... I think when you start thinking about the pitch and the opposition and everything else, I don't think that matters to Ange Postecoglou too much. Not from what I've seen anyway. Just kind of will go with his strongest lineup, and I think Kyogo is by far and away the strongest striker that we have. Incidentally, on Kyogo, I've not seen the whole documentary. I've just seen these snippets that are getting posted of this documentary of him cutting about Glasgow and Kelvin Grove and playing football with kids in Kelvin Grove. It brilliant, like, just to see like it captured on camera, the reaction that he creates or he generates when he's walking it. Like, I think he's walking up Buchanan Street and just people coming up. Obviously, there's a couple of derogatory things fired his way, as you would maybe expect, sadly. But the majority of people are just running up, like, you know, kind of like, I don't know, a woman in her 50s or 60s, like, oh, can I get a wee picture, Kyogo? yeah, sure. Leans in, and then there's like a bunch of other folk coming up as well. And he just seems like a really, really happy guy who has a room in his house dedicated to his shoes. Did you see that?
I've not seen that. Is that
right? Small, I just saw an article where they showed you pictures and there's
got a
room.
Pair of a, has he got a Celtic Samba pair?
He's not got the Celtic Sambas. mine arrived, or I picked mine up day before yesterday I picked mine up, and yeah, they're smart saying. I mean, I don't care about any midlife crisis Celtic DA connotations. You can bin them for me, because it's a pair of Celtic Adidas trainers that are well done. They're not like garish, I don't think. I think that the badge is subtle, the boys on the inside is subtle. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, they just look like a cool pair of Sambas, but they happen to be Celtic. So, but no, Kyogo's got a few questionable pairs of trainers in his collection, including horrendous, horrendous pair of slip-on buckled shoes that look like something that maybe like Doug Tanyan and the Three Musketeers would wear or something like that. That's a very old school reference for the...
Was it not the Muskahounds? Was it not Doug Tanyan and the Three Muskahounds?
Yeah, it was the Muskahounds. I should know that, because I have the DVD.
Seriously, man, that's super. Look at this.
Actually do.
Welcome to Retro Corner with JP Mason. I can actually hear the theme song in my head. I'm not going to sing it, right? I'm not going to sing it, but I can hear that.
He's got them in his collection, which I don't know if I would have on display, to be honest. They're a bit offside. But going back to the starting lineup, I think I don't know where we're at with injuries in terms of everybody. I don't know how Hitati is. I don't know how Moy is. There's others, isn't there? Ralston pulled out of Scotland.
Ralston. He also had Abada and Haksabanovic as well, but I think and Maeda. But Maeda's been spotted training as well on the socials, because everybody's looking to see who's actually in the training session. So it may not be as bad. I mean, Ange has got that habit, though. He doesn't really labour on injuries, who's in, who's out. And he'll probably, in fact, no, probably, he will be asked the question tomorrow at the press conference, and he might give us a wee bit more info then. But I'm going to watch back on that, Kyogo, to see if he's got a pair of slip-ons with tassels as well. Because remember them in the 80s with white socks, and they've come back. They're now in vogue.
Tragically, I do remember them because I had a pair.
I knew you were going to say that. I could tell by the look on your face.
I was a wee guy. It must have been like 8 or 9, but I knew that they were in fashion. Like, I'm talking 88, 89.
Were they black? Were they black, though?
Well, of course they were black.
Because you could get them in white and all that as well, couldn't you?
No, but I used to wear them at mass on a Sunday. Like, I'd have the slip-on tasseled black shoes,
brilliant,
white socks, flecked trousers. Remember flecked trousers? They were a thing.
Oh, yeah. Aye.
I
thought you were going to say tartan jeans. Remember tartan jeans?
I mean, I remember the jeans that had little bits in the pockets, you know, like a brown suede in the pocket or in the patch on the back. Remember
Falkirk,
them.
Falkirk Market, mate.
Falkirk Market jumps in. Definitely. But that was my Sunday mass wear. Thin leather tie.
Oh, yes. Yeah. By the way, see if you were out and about and somebody was kicking about wearing that, that would now be part and parcel. That's in vogue. That's what the kids are down with. We are getting old, mate. There is no denying it. Right. Craigie White. See that picture of Jock Steen? He's wearing a training top. And it's a black jersey. It's probably Umbro, right, with the white bit at the top. There's a few pictures of him wearing it, and you just cannot find these training tops anywhere. They're absolutely minted from back in the day. Hi from sunny Springburn. Really enjoyed the Peter Grant night. Peter speaks very well and obviously cares about our great club. The Decanio Tales were top drawer. Thanks for coming along, first and foremost. I know that we have gone on about this Peter Grant night all week, by the way, JP, right? Because there was so much. It was one of the ones, right, where if I'm going to interview somebody, I'll read their book, I'll read an autobiography, I'll do all that, listen to every interview that's ever been done, and then you've got your questions. And if I'm doing a one-hour interview, I like to have 50 questions, knowing there is no way I'm going to ask that, because people don't take a question and answer it and take 60 seconds to answer it. With Granty, I was at the point where we were probably over an hour in, and I had like swathes and swathes of questions still to ask, and I wanted to keep asking them, but you're trying to stick to but he was just so good at taking something and running with it. So his stories about Decanio, for example, were absolutely tremendous. I mean, I know what Decanio is. I know what his political views are. I do not condone in any way, shape or form fascism. I mean, there's far too much kind of right-wing views in our country right now, JP, which are, you know, they're affecting every single one of us. I don't condone that whatsoever. But for that particular night, we were talking about Decanio, the player, and Decanio, the teammate. We weren't going into, obviously, his tattoos and his political leanings or any of that. And to be honest, the way Granty tells it. And Granty had a fantastic pair of shoes. If you want to talk about slip-ons, right? Did you see E-Tims had zoomed in? You get away with nothing now, do you? Somebody took a picture of Granty on the stage and E-Tims had zoomed in to question the footwear. I mean, I'm pretty sure they were a very expensive pair of shoes, but yeah, I don't know if Kyogo's got a pair of them in his room dedicated to footwear. But yeah, it was a great night, a fantastic night, JP. So and
it was one of those ones where when I saw he'd stepped in for Danny McGrain, I saw the date, my heart sank because I was like, oh man, I would have, like, because he's my era, you know. He was there in that sort of formative time. Danny McGrain was before my time. So obviously love hearing Danny McGrain talk as well, because he's got good patter. But Peter, like you say, Peter Grant talking about those times and that kind of changeover period where we went from nearly going to the wall to surviving and then obviously winning a trophy, and how that much, hearing how much that much meant to him, you know. I was really, really gutted. I mean, I put up that picture of him celebrating at Ibrox, so quite a few people were just like, oh, that goal that he claimed at Ibrox, it wasn't his. And I'm like, I'm sorry, but if I was anywhere near that, I'd be claiming it as well. Against them.
Should we put it too far? We should put it too far, right? Let's zoom in.
and the Celtic end as well. I mean, that's dream stuff. Like, I don't think you can really take that away from him. And if you are, then you're just being a bit...
A bit mean-spirited, you know what I mean? A wee bit of mean-spirited. The thing is, I always remember when we won the league that season, and there was a fantastic kind of special, and it was Ian Archer narrated it, right? Ian Archer narrated it. It was brilliant. It was like on after we beat Dundee 3-0, and I taped it, and I've still got the videotape in the house. It's brilliant. But when it cuts for the break, right, for the adverts, it's got Grant in slow motion going on his knees and giving it one of them. And at the time, it was really, really sunny. And back then, I don't know if it's because the camera equipment, you know, it wasn't live that to each game, but the camera equipment, it kind of affected the shot. And then they put a filter through it as well to make it look even brighter. And I just remember thinking, what a celebration that is, by the way. And I remember, it must have been a Sunday Mail the following day, when, yeah, you know, back in the '80s, the Sunday Mail was a paper that ended up dropping on my doormat along with the Sunday Post. And they attributed the goal, or they gave the goal, to Butcher OG. And I thought, no, that's Granty's goal. And by the way, he's still claiming it in 2023. He is still claiming that goal as his, and quite rightly so.
I mean, at the end of the day, it wouldn't have happened without him being there, I don't think. So it's kind of, whether or not he got the last touch to it or not, I mean, there's no point in splitting hairs over it. I think I see that as his goal, and certainly the celebration was good enough to for the goal to be attributed to him anyway, I would say. And hopefully he'll do something else at some point on the Celtic circuit somewhere, so I can go and hear his part.
We'll make sure of it. But also at the same time, and it's no jobs for the boys here, by the way, we're going to be talking a wee bit about some of the comments that have been made over the last couple of weeks by Harry Kuehl and Alistair Johnson. And it's pretty clear that there's a culture developing at Celtic, or it's already developed, and then people are walking into that and kind of feeding into it and buying into it. JP, and if you want a culture at a football club, I think it's important. It really is important to have, you know, a whole host of people who have maybe come through the Celtic ranks. Now, people were like, "That's jobs for the boys." No, they've also got to be able to do the job, absolutely. But I think it is important to have people like Steve McManus, Darren O'Day, John Kennedy at the club. I really do. And you know, we've got ambassadors like Roy Aiken and Tommy Boyd at the club as well. Davy Hay is an ambassador at the club. And I think Peter Grant, is his finest coaching days behind him? He doesn't think so. He was down south for, I think, 27 years, employed the whole time, JP, you know, Premiership. He talks about Jens and O'Reilly because he worked with him as kids. And I actually like him on the Celtic TV co-coms. I think he's brilliant. He is balanced. But if he doesn't get back into it in that respect and at that level, like coaching and management, I think it's important to have people at the club like Peter Grant. I really do. Mm. I mean, I remember hearing a story, and I know there's no really any love lost between the fan bases, but I remember reading about Ajax and how they've got a lot of ex-players behind the scenes, JP. And sometimes, you know, you're a 14-year-old and you're thinking to yourself, well, I signed for Ajax or Feyenoord. And then Patrick Kluivert chaps your door and comes and has a wee cup of tea with your mum and dad and stuff like that, you know, and basically sells you the club. I think it's important for people like Grant, who is undoubtedly Celtic through and through, to still be involved in some way, shape or form at the club. I really do. Whether or not that happens, I don't know. I know he's got ambitions to get back into the kind of managerial coaching side of things. Now, there are four players that we're going to talk about, even though we're half an hour in, JP. The urban culture, Robert, if you have the time, this is going back to a quest or a search for tickets for Motherwell. Have the time, contact other Celtic sites and supporters clubs. What's it, Celtic Spares on Twitter? They're pretty good if you want to put it out there. Celtic Spares on Twitter. And what you'll probably find is that you won't have to pay over the odds at all for these tickets as well. I'd help you out, but we've actually got, I'm not going to say who it is, but we've got someone who was in a very excellent, superb creation records band who are going to be using my tickets that day, by the way. But if I say their name, I'll be accused of name dropping. And I've already name dropped Peter Grant today, so I didn't want to keep doing it.
I don't really think you can call name dropping Peter Grant a name drop, considering you interviewed him in front of an audience like on Saturday night. I don't really know how that is name dropping, because ultimately you're talking about an event you were involved with. So if that's name dropping, then the game's gone.
Well, I was speaking to somebody at the bar. And I remember looking at them and thinking, he's quite an older gentleman, maybe a wee bit older than me, but he was pretty, like, he looked the part, right? Well-dressed and that. He had the kind of a mod haircut with the sides, but all grey and stuff. I'm thinking, he had a bit of a Paul Weather look about him. Mm-hmm. So I started chatting away at him. He's going, I love Thursday with you and JP with the music chat. You know what I mean? So he was name-dropping JP Mason in a pub in Glasgow. Ridiculizer. Hopefully no Celtic fan would act like a ticket tout and gouge another turn. I don't think they would. I've always had a situation where if you need extra tickets, you end up at the very most paying what the ticket price is. And often you exchange tickets back and forth. You do somebody a favour, you always get it back. I don't know if there was any strong words in the comments yesterday or at some point this week. Who's fighting today? I joke afternoon all. Hope you're all well. Celtic is back, baby. Yeah. We will be touching also on the international break as well. But let's talk about the four players that I've got in mind. And I don't disagree with the likes of Burnaby, Turnbull, Ralston. I think they will definitely play a part. I'm going to start off with having a wee look today. He seems to have had a very good international break. Two substitute appearances. JP scored a brilliant goal that was chopped off for offside. Did you see it?
Cracking
goal against Uruguay. Superb finish. And he's celebrating and all the rest of it. One of the ones, the only person in the stadium that doesn't know it's been chopped off. Poor guy. Anyway, I was looking. Did it go to VAR? I'm not sure if it was. It probably needs to go to VAR, doesn't it? I think he'll play an important part. I'm not going to say he's going to start the games because Kyogo's the man on form. And I also don't disagree that he might start this weekend because of the physicality of the guy as well, playing against Ross County. But I was looking at what he's done so far since he came to Celtic. 233 minutes, so the equivalent of 2.5 games is what he's played. He scored 3 goals. He's made an impact. And I think he's one of the four who will be making an impact between now and the end of the season, JP.
And he's only 21 as well, isn't he?
See the size of him? Oh, it's frightening.
I think we've potentially got somebody in him that could garner a big fee in the future should we choose to sell him on. If he follows that model of like staying here for 2 years and moving on, he's at an age whereby you could probably be looking for a significant fee, just the same way as we're probably going to look for a significant fee for Abada if all the rumours are true in the summer. But I mean, I suppose there's no point in thinking about things like that. At this point, it's just to enjoy what he'll do and what he can do while he's here. And I certainly think I would not bat an eyelid if he was to start on Sunday. I just don't necessarily think that with the game being as important as it is, I mean, all games are important, but I just don't think Ange Postecoglou, after a break like it has been, whereby Kyogo wasn't away with international duty, should be fresh and raring to go. I think he'll start him on Sunday, and I think I don't know about Maeda. I don't really know the circumstances of what happened with him coming back from international duty, because he came back ahead of a second game, didn't he? There was another game, and he must have got the okay to come back from the international team boss, because it's not normal that a player would leave. If you've been called up, you surely would be there for both games. But he's obviously indicated that he wanted to come back. I think he posted a picture the other day in Kelvin Grove Park, because it was a sunny day and there's not been too many of them recently. And I happened to be in Kelvin Grove Park on, what would it have been, Monday? And I saw he was out. So it's good to see the players just enjoying Glasgow when they can, when it's not absolutely hammering rain. I think certainly has done himself no harm at all with what we've seen of him so far. And you wonder what it would have been like, or how it would have been had the other guy, was it Cho? Was the other guy that we were going in for?
He actually replaced Cho
did it?
In the Uruguay game, yeah. So he came on for Cho.
So you wonder how Cho would have fared in the 236 minutes or whatever, like how he would have contributed, if it had been better or worse. Because obviously it was no secret that we were in for him. I mean, I don't know if Ange Postecoglou has ever commented about him publicly or anything, but it seemed to be that this was the guy that we were going for, and then it kind of fell down a bit, whether it was he didn't want to move in January or the club didn't want him to move in January, I don't know. But as ever, we have a seemingly decent list of players for each position, whereby if it doesn't work out with somebody, we'll move on to the next one. And the quality hasn't really dropped that much. I think it's something I'm still getting used to, you know, even thinking like Alistair Johnston, getting him in for the right-back position before Juranovic has left. Mm-hmm. And again, getting him in, that deal was done before the World Cup, 100%. And then he goes and has a decent World Cup. And the fact that he's even at the World Cup as well, is we're signing players that are playing at the top level, which is great to see. And and obviously always playing for his country as well. So this is sort of uncharted territory for us, really, isn't it?
It is. I mean, you imagine JP in the summer, if we go and get Cho, we bring him in as well.
Yeah.
You know, and you look at the strength and the depth in every position, because this whole mantra, we don't stop, it's not just the football, it's the whole thing. We're never going to stop evolving, never going to stop strengthening the squad. And he's always looking to improve the squad. The next player I'm going to speak about, Danielle, is indeed Iwata. And he's a player who he's played 1,027 minutes, that was Haksabanovic. Iwata has played 124 minutes, so just over one game. So we brought this guy in, and you're looking at every performance that he's had, and you think to yourself, he's done well every time he's come in. We've spoken about his ability to find a space and always look for the pass and make himself available. He's obviously one of these number sixes. He's a pivot. He's one of these more defensive midfield players. But again, he's one of these options, I think, for Ange, because all it takes is an injury to one of the top dogs. And, you know, we know that McGregor can shift his position and he can push up a wee bit if necessary. But Iwata, I think we're going to see more of him. I was surprised when I looked at just how little game time he's had so far. Every single appearance has been a cameo, 124 minutes, JP. But again, there was a question yesterday that was asked about playing with two number sixes. Domestically, no. Maybe something that Ange is looking towards for Europe next year.
Perhaps, aye. But like you said, the situation is a bit precarious. And when you look at injuries, they start to sort of pile up. If Moy's gone, if Hatate's gone... Mm-hmm. For any period of time, you're going to have to look to guys like Iwata to come in and play, and maybe McGregor plays in a different part of the midfield. Incidentally, some of the comments about McGregor from the international games, unbelievable. I mean, I'm not talking about Celtic fans. I just can't believe people would be... I think some of it was obviously... fishing a little bit to get bites from. I mean, I can't stand that, like, that sort of pattern on Twitter, where you're just basically saying something that you know is blatantly not true, mm-hmm. but or you're like, oh well, I'll get a bit of traction on Twitter with this, but I'll just say that, and you're like, Callum McGregor is the worst player in the park for Scotland. I mean, are you kidding me? How can a player that is playing in a successful side against Spain, who haven't lost a qualifier since 2016 or something like that, who Scotland haven't beaten since 1984, how does one of those players be the worst player in a midfield that is so important? Like, where the game's won, essentially, in midfield. I mean, I thought the Scotland defence were really good as well. I thought Porteous was man of the match against Spain, in my opinion. I thought he was outstanding. The way he was flinging himself around, not to the point that he was, you know, hacking people or anything like that, or endangering his position on the pitch. I thought he was really, really good. And then I've got a lot of snide comments from Hibs fans as well, going, see, we all told you Porteous is a good player. I don't think I don't remember sitting here talking to you saying Porteous isn't a good player. I think
we ran with the story. Would Ange consider Porteous as a signing?
Yeah, and I wasn't completely against it. The only thing I was maybe against was his temperament. I didn't discount his qualities as a footballer. I thought he's a decent centre-half, and he's starting to prove that at international level and at club level with Watford. But yeah, McGregor, I think you said it on one of the shows in the last 2 days. If something was to happen to McGregor on international duty, as can happen, especially if you're playing 90 minutes twice in such close proximity, and you're given everything. I mean, all the players had to give everything against Spain. It wasn't a cigars out after 10 minutes job. It was a determined performance, one of the best I've seen from Scotland. I actually watched it in King Tut's, believe it or not. There was a seminar booked for some outside thing. I don't know if it was council or whatever. So there was a screen set up on the stage, and there was a seating all put out in Tuts, and I was just in doing some work in the office, and Scott, who listens to this actually, he's a Rangers fan.
Shout out to Scott.
He's a Rangers fan, but He's a good guy. he came up and he went, what are you doing for the Scotland game? And I went, I don't know, I'll probably just watch it when I get home. And he went, oh, we're going to watch it on the big screen. And I went, brilliant. So I just went down, got a beer and sat watching it in the venue in the dark on a big projector screen. It was
quality.
A unique experience. I don't know if it'll ever happen again, but it was obviously, it wasn't open to the public. It was just me and Scott watched it. So I had a really good feeling about it after the first 10-15. I was like, we look pretty good here in terms of the setup and just the structure and everything else. Like nobody looked like they were going to let anybody each other down. I think he's created a really good sort of harmony within that team, and everybody, similar to Celtic, everybody comes on and contributes, and there's no petted lips at not getting a game and things like that. It's, you know, you've got guys like Billy Gilmore kicking his heels on the bench. He didn't even get on. And he's touted as one of the best Scottish prospects in years. So that was good. But things like McGregor potentially getting injured, you're going to need guys like Iwata, who was the most valuable player in the Japanese league. And and he's played, since we've signed him, we're now nearly in April, and he's only played the equivalent of just over a game.
I know.
That shows the strength of our team and squad, that a guy like that doesn't just come in and pick up a jersey. He's got to earn that jersey and do a lot more than he's done to get a start or whatever. So, it's a good position to be in.
It is. It's a huge test because we've seen players that have come in and not had the game time, and obviously they haven't been happy to continually push for a jersey, albeit they were on loan. Abel Garin-Yentz, they've come in and they've gone because they're not getting the game time, JP. But a player like Iwata, I think he's going to have to be patient, but he could play a big part. Talking about the King Tots, by the way, that you should have maybe let the public in. That'd have been a cracking night.
Because they need to pay. Like if it was a public event.
Oh, right enough. Yeah, to screen it.
Aye.
Which is expensive. Kevin Mullen, afternoon, Axom. Afternoon to you as well, Kevin. Love that Scotland did well during the week, but let's get back to business. Get this title wrapped up on the road to treble. Hail, hail, yes. I watched the game. You know, I've spoken about international football quite a bit since starting Axom. I was interested in the game. I remember reading a headline leading up to it from Lyndon Dykes, and it was quite bullish, and I quite liked that. I like that in a striker as well. And I think Cole's got a bit of that about him, you know, proper self-belief. But what I think about Stevie Clark, last note on the subject, is that he's created a club atmosphere within the squad, which I think is so hard to do at international level because you're not seeing each other that often, but he seems to have been able to do it. I remember Venables done it with the 96 England team at the Euros. All the players spoke about how it was kind of like a club vibe that they had, which is so, so hard for an international boss to do, and I think he's done it. Joe Hamilton, I remember when hard hats painted green and white were the thing. Yeah, we're talking about obviously everything that's been happening in and around games at Ibrox, basically. And we had a really good discussion on Tuesday about it, JP, what's going to get done about it. There's obviously been an update in that the SFA are going to be taking sanctions against the individual who thought it was acceptable to headbutt Fran Alonso from behind Craig McPherson, charged by the SFA. Police Scotland are continuing with their investigation. Who knows what they're going to find? And we have spoken long and hard about it, and that's what Joe's talking about. I've got a great picture of one of the hard hats. It's all been painted with the names and everything of the players of the time. It's got like Lou McCarrie's name on it and Kenny Dalglish and all the rest of it. I've got photographs of it. I think I've shared them on Twitter a few times, but they didn't make it into the book. But yeah, we're getting to the point now where the safety of the fans and the players and your staff is constantly being questioned. And are the club doing everything they can? I think they're probably doing a lot behind the scenes that we're unaware of. They've certainly done something with the ticket allocation, but that protects the fans' safety and experience is non-existent now because we won't be there. How can we protect staff? How can we protect the players? JP, glass in the goal mouth, bottles to the head, or the physiotherapist, and all the other, it was basically on Tuesday, Lawrence and I listed everything that's happened over the last few years. It goes on and on and on. How can we protect them? What has to be done?
I mean, the not taking tickets thing, I can't really say I'm that surprised at that. I mean, maybe that's raised eyebrows in some quarters, but given the length of the list of things that are now that you can now attribute to what happens at Ibrox Stadium when you go there as a player, a coach, or a fan, it's not as if it's all directed at the fans. It's now it's opened up. The guy got jailed the other day, did he not, for a year. For a 5-year ban from football. That's not made up. That's not a harsh punishment. That's not some sort of, like, I don't know, thing that's a wrong, that the guy's been hard done by and anything. He threw a glass ball at someone in at a football match. I just don't get how, no matter what you think about a club, a player, a person. I mean, that there's no way that guy had any beef personally with that coach. Probably doesn't even know his name.
But if you're associated with Celtic, you're a target.
Yeah, Celtic badge on, and he was probably the closest person who happened to get in the firing line of what that guy decided to do at that moment in time. And I just don't get it. And then, I mean, if you're Ali McCoist or you're whoever watching this, and I'm sure Alan McCoist doesn't watch it, but if you're whoever and you're going, oh, well, what about you at Anfield? If you tell me that Celtic fans threw glass onto that pitch at Anfield, then I'll condemn that as much as anybody else. I would also condemn them throwing really anything. If it was a plastic cup or whatever, I just don't feel that you should be throwing anything, an object at all. But there is a hell of a difference between throwing a juice cup and a glass bottle. I just don't know how, like I said, if somebody comes to me and says, oh, well, it was glass they threw, I'll hold my hands up and go, right, cool, condemn that as much as anything else. But I've yet to be told that there was glass thrown at Steven Gerrard or anybody else at that game. I would imagine that the security procedures at Anfield in a game like that are a lot better than they are at Celtic, because, you mean, you can get glass into Celtic Park. There's no two ways about that. You hear the clinks all the time. People do get half deckers in and more. I mean, look what the guy got into Hampden, that giant rocket launcher for the fireworks. I mean, how that got in, I'll never know. But it does point to maybe a little bit of lax security for our stadiums. That, I mean, was there not a picture one day of bottles lined up at Ibrox?
Right along the wall, yeah.
Along the wall, and you're like, wow, that's... If you can get all that in, then what's to stop every single person bringing one in, do you know?
I know.
The sanctions, or not the sanctions, but the decision to not take tickets did not surprise me at all, because something had to give. And it's just a really sad situation that we find ourselves in, that we are actively not taking tickets for a club game in Scotland that we always have done, apart from the time that they banned us for, what was it, damaging the seats, I think.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep. The one each game, John Collins.
With a free kick. I certainly don't condone damaging seats either. I've seen it happen in front of me at an away ground, and you just want to throttle the person that does things like that. I mean, just have a bit of decorum about yourself. No matter how annoyed you get or how excited you get at winning, deliberately damaging a seat at an away game is just, it's bad crack. I really, it happened like right in front of me. A guy just absolutely...
I wasn't wearing them, Pete. I don't own a pair of tasseled slip-ons. I've just seen them kicking about recently.
I have to say, by the way, Neil and Dan, we're talking 30 years ago for me.
You get the suede ones as well.
Suede slip-on shoes with tassels, no socks. No chance. Just the whole smashing seats thing as well. It really, really annoys me when I see that happen. I've only seen it happen like twice. I've seen it happen deliberately. Okay, you can maybe stand on a seat and it breaks and you're in the middle of celebrating, and that's unfortunate, that's an accident, but deliberately doing it is out of order. So I don't know where we go from here. Like, what's going to happen next season? Is this going to be it for the rest of time now? I mean, we're going back to 2018 since the last time we had the full stand.
The full complement. Wow.
5 years. 5 years. And I know that there's been the COVID season and a half almost in there to muddy that a little bit. But, I mean, that's 5 years. I mean, I can't see it changing now. I think it's gone too far. It's too entrenched. Nobody wants to yield. It's a total war of attrition, or if that's what you want. I don't know if that is the right phrase to use, but it just seems like nobody's going to back down. I mean, we've not got anything to back down really on. It was starting where it was started. So I've kind of resigned myself to the fact that I'll probably never go back to that stadium. Mm. I've said before, I certainly won't get one of the 700 tickets. If that's all they continue to give us, I'll not get one of them. It's a closed shop in that sense. And I get why it is. People get the points that they get for going to games, and they get priority, and that's cool. But it's just unfortunate that, you know, there's going to be a lot of people denied that experience. Because when you had the full stand, I don't recall there being any issues in terms of our safety, in terms of the fans' safety. Players, different story. Batteries, coins. Mm-hmm. I saw that. I saw a Rangers official pick up numerous coins from the corner area when they held us in. I saw it happen. I've said it before. I saw a guy walking around picking up coins and putting them in his pocket. And obviously, you Google Scott Brown at Ibrox. Coin, Scott Brown coin at Ibrox, the first picture that comes up is Scott Brown smiling at the Rangers end, at the Rangers support, with £2 coins in his hand. He's going like that.
Could buy you twice. Is that what he's saying? I'm going to bring this up. Mark Tyler, 100%, been targeted numerous times wearing a Celtic jersey, talking football and telling folks I'm a Celtic, not pleasant. And it is a real concern. We've been talking about it on here, about the safety of anyone associated with Celtic at the next game at Ibrox. And, you know, hopefully we can talk about that game afterwards without having to go into the safety concerns. But it's massive. And you were talking about smuggling bottles, and right, say, you know, one in three people get searched in a 60,000 capacity crowd, right? Say that happens and it's a search that's just a pat down. You know, there's a real possibility that a lot of alcohol could get smuggled into the ground. So then the onus is then on your security within the stadium, JP, CCTV. That's what it is. That's what it comes down to. You know, you're monitoring the crowd and you're able to identify such and such as having a swig out of this or that. That's how you can deal with it. And it's not about being a killjoy here, by the way, because I think that there's a much wider discussion to be had about alcohol in football stadiums that would stop a lot of that. There would be no need to smuggle it in.
A lot of people, well, the majority of people that do smuggle them in, they drink them and they put them down and that's it. But the thing is, if things go unpunished, like they have done, I mean, I still don't know if there's been any sanctions against Rangers for the glass on the pitch at Joe Hart's goal mouth. There's obviously been the punishment for this guy who's thrown the bottle at the Celtic coach. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, when things go unpunished, that's when you get maybe somebody that's had too many and does get a glass bottle into the ground and is a little bit unhinged. Let's face it, not everybody that goes into Celtic Park is 100% sane. So if you're inebriated in any way and you're like, you just might think, oh, well, nothing happened to them. I'm going to get my own back or something. And you just launch. And then that's when we're really down the slippery slope, whereby it's almost anarchy in terms of like, right, well, when's this going to stop? Like, because you could seriously damage, obviously you'll damage our reputation as a club. I'd hate to see that happen at Celtic. I'd be appalled if I was a Rangers fan and by the way, on that, see the headbutt thing? There's a page that attributes itself to being the official media partner of that club. Mm. I don't think there's been a tweet or anything said about that. No condemnation. See if Stephen McManus or John Kennedy or whoever did something like that to a Rangers coach or a Rangers manager at any level, I would certainly hope that we'd be sitting discussing it today and condemning it, because
it's
absolutely completely out of order. I wouldn't want anybody like that near my club if they were behaving like that. I think it's completely out of order. And, you know, I don't know what was said. People seem to be like, oh, well, something must have been said if he was reacting like that. And I'm like, even if something...
Trying to justify that.
Even if something was said, I mean, does it really warrant him going up to the guy from behind when he's shaking hands with that guy's players? Like, shaking hands with the girls, you know, well done, blah, blah, blah. And then out of nowhere, a guy comes up, barges him in the back, tries to stick a nut in him. At what point in life is that acceptable behaviour? Whether you've said anything or not, whether you've celebrated a goal in the 99th minute, what, is he supposed to sit in his hands? Is he supposed to not celebrate a goal? I mean, is that not allowed? Are we not allowed to celebrate goals now? I mean, absolutely insane. And some of the stuff, obviously you see stuff on Twitter that isn't from official channels, and it's maybe just their fans or whatever, but they seem to almost be reveling in it. And that is sad as anything, man. That is so sad that you would revel. And that if that's all you've got to cheer about, then I know which club I'd rather be supporting, put it that way.
And the thing you mentioned earlier about McCoist has got a big platform, and for him to try this false equivalence of, and I said yesterday, of bringing Celtic into the discussion because of some empty plastic cups, there's a difference between assaulting somebody, knowingly assaulting somebody, and knowing that if you threw a scarf or a cup or a paper airplane, which I've seen at football games getting thrown onto the park, you're not going to hurt anybody with that. I mean, come on. Yeah, I don't condone it, JP, but there is a difference between that and what was the point of the discussion, which was the behaviour of an Ibrox employee. So we'll see what happens with that. The other two players, Haksabanovic and Kobayashi. Now, interestingly enough, Kobayashi is naturally left-sided. He might get game time. All it takes is one injury, like you've said before. 224 minutes, or the equivalent of 2.5 games since he signed. And again, I've liked the look of him, but he's played 2.5 games since he came to the club. Haksabanovic is the one people might say, ah, you know, he's not been scarcely used. But when you consider that he joined in August, he's only played the equivalent of 11.5 games for Celtic, 1,027 minutes. And in the 11.5 games, JP, 5 goals, 4 assists. So it shows you his impact every time virtually he's on the park. Interestingly enough, Norrköping are still claiming £3.2 million from Rubin Kazan, which has not been paid from the original fee that Rubin Kazan paid when they bought him. Just 12 months before he comes to Celtic, they agree to pay £5.5 million quid for this player. That's the level of player we've got in Haksabanovic. And of the four, I think he is probably going to make the biggest impact between now and the end of the season. But it just shows you we've got those players bubbling away under the surface almost, having not had much game time, who can be called upon maybe even this weekend if we've got an injury or two.
Thank God we've got them, because like you say, or like we've all said, that when the numbers drop of the regular first 11, you need to have people ready to step in. And that's why we've got the squad that Ange Postecoglou has assembled that is up there with the strongest squads that I can remember. Now that when injuries subside and you look at that first 11 and then you look at the bench, my mate Michael would always say, you're only as strong as your bench or whatever. And he would always point to the bench at times when we had a good squad, and we certainly do have that now. Guys that are knocking on the door. I mean, O'Reilly doesn't even get a regular game. I mean, he's been kept out of the side, and a highly, highly rated youngster who I think everybody would think is going to do well for us in terms of what we recoup on his transfer fee in the future. He's a good age as well. He's the right side of, you know, 25. All of those, any player that's sort of 20 to 21 to 25, you've got to be looking to get a decent fee for them at the point that they leave, because we've got to be realistic, they're not going to be here forever. I'd love that if they did see out the best days of their career at Celtic, but I know that's not going to happen, and Ange just prepared us for that and everything that he said. Like, don't get too attached to your heroes, because we're going to move very kind of aggressively in the transfer market, to the point that as soon as there's an indication that those players are not fully committed to what we're doing here, then we'll help them find a new club and we'll replace them, and it'll be ruthless, and there'll be no room for sentiment. And as much as that stings a little bit, especially if it was somebody like Hatate to go or something like that, you would accept it, because ultimately you trust what's going on at the club. The evidence is there for all to see. Mm-hmm. The Rangers are supposedly in title winning form, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at all what they do. As long as the machine keeps rolling, and it's definitely rolling for us right now. There's no two ways about it.
I like it. The machine, rage against the machine. You could quite change that. You could change that into Ange quite easily. Right.
No, actually, I'm standing on the shoulders of giants. I'll tell you very briefly about that. That album came out when I was living in France, and I actually bought it in Fnac in France, which Fnac is the, I guess, the equivalent of HMV or Virgin or whatever. There was a Fnac in Nice, and I used to go to it all the time, because it was like three floors, and it was new to me. It was a new music shop to me, so I kind of found it a bit kind of exotic. It was expensive, though. Anything you were buying that was UK was, there would always, I know you spoke about imports of Japanese and American releases of Oasis stuff, but I think I paid somewhere in the region of £20 for the CD of Standing on the Shoulders of Giants when it came out. I associate that album with living in Nice, so the quality of the songs, whether they be good or indifferent, it's one of those ones where it's like it's a specific time of your life. I totally think of that album and like things like Gas Panic's a great song.
Yeah, like, I agree with that.
I think Liam still, does Liam not still play it in his set? I think he's played it. He's included it in his solo sets. And I know Little James is obviously questionable. That is on that album, isn't it?
It is. But, I mean, the sentiment is nice, JP. The sentiment is nice. But to be fair, if anybody watches last night's show between Kevin Graham and I, Little James didn't get that much praise, let's just say, as a standalone song.
Well, I mean, it's hardly surprising, really, is it? But there's my copy bought in. It's even got the sticker in the back, Nouvelle Album.
I can speak French.
Oh, and that's right, because they had dates in France, and the tour dates are on the CD, if you can see.
Superb.
So the tour dates were, and I remember looking into going to Marseille, because they were playing in Marseille whilst I was living there, and I got talked out of going. I think it was my mum, actually. She was just like, Marseille's dodgy, don't go down there on your own and all that. And a few other people did say that as well, that like Marseille is not a place. It sounds nice, but apparently it is quite dodgy. A lot of crime there and stuff. So I talked myself out of going, and I regret it, because it would have been so cool to see Oasis in France. I don't even know what the crowds would have been like or anything like that. Maybe it would have been a bit weird, like whether or not they would be as vocal or as up for it as Glasgow or Newcastle. But that's what else is on it. Sunday Morning Call, like that.
Good song, yeah.
Yeah. Go Let It Out, the single as well, yeah. I don't think it's entirely terrible, but it's certainly not.
It's a patchy album, JP. In my opinion, of course. But what I pointed out last night is that it was released in the same month that Inverness Carlow Thistle beat Celtic in the Scottish Cup.
Oh yeah, 3-1.
So it was a bad month at the office for a Celtic / Oasis fan. I'm going to play a very quick video before we go, because we are going to be on stage next month with Alan Thompson. And obviously we interviewed Alan last year, I think it was, down in Manchester, and I'm really looking forward to him joining us at Gracie's.
It just showed you what a good team we were, how far we got and ran that Porto team close. They went on and won the Champions League the following season under Mourinho. So it just shows you how good they were. And I think with one or two additions to that team we had, we could have gone a step further, who knows, without a doubt.
Tom Moore reckons a few signings and we could have pushed on in the Champions League back then. I think we had a good campaign the season after it, actually. But Tom will be joining us at Gracie's. Get along to that if you can. There are some tickets available underneath this video in the ticket link. Come and see us at Gracie's. JP, it's been absolutely brilliant. We've ran over because that's what we do once we get stuck into the old football and music chat. I've got to thank everybody for getting involved in the comment section. It's been great. I don't know if anybody's fallen out today or this week at all, but it's subscriber-only chat. You can only get involved in the comments if you're subscribing. So get onto the YouTube channel, hit subscribe, notifications, and give us a thumbs up because it all helps with the channel as well. All that's left for me to say once again, JP Mason, thank you for joining me on A Celtic State of Mind.
Network.